This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Welcome back. You are tuned in to the Heritage Radio Network, and I know it's been a long time since you have heard my voice. This is Erin Fairbanks, host of the Farm Report, back from break. Big thanks to Holly Cederholm, who covered the show in my absence. And we are here today to kick off the brand new spring-summer season, and we are joined in the studio by a very special guest from quite far away. I want to give a big welcome to Kamal Muzawak. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Erin.
So you are here all the way from Lebanon.
Yes, there are planes from here to there, you know. I didn't come swimming.
No, I mean, that would have been quite a feat, actually.
I wouldn't try it.
We would have a different conversation, I think, had you swum here. Well, before we kind of jump into some of your work, I want to give folks who maybe are not familiar with Lebanon a little bit of a broad strokes picture of the country as it relates to kind of agriculture and the work that you do. What should we kind of know about Lebanon to understand the rest of your story?
I think we should start by saying, like, there are no camels there.
No camels. Okay.
It's not a desert. And it's part of a wonderful part of the world, which is the Mediterranean. So the Mediterranean is this beautiful big sea that used to be called the Mare Nostrum in the Roman time. And it has, like, it's like a big basin, it's like a big pond, let's say. Mm-hmm. And it has different sides. It's Europe from one side, the Middle East from another side, and North Africa from the third side. So Lebanon is at what we call, you know, the Middle East, or what I like to call the Eastern Mediterranean. Lebanon is just at the center of this Eastern Mediterranean. So if you look at the geography of this Mediterranean Sea, it's somehow like, you know, the belly of the Mediterranean. It's like a crossroad. It's physically, you know, geographically, it's like a crossroad of all of this old world where all of the civilization, the major civilization, were born around this Mediterranean Sea. So Lebanon is a rectangle, 200 kilometer long by 50 kilometer large, just at the center of the Eastern Mediterranean. So it's a very big coastal part. So there's first a coastal plain, mm-hmm. then a first mountain range, as it's called, the Mount Lebanon mountain range, then the Bekaa Valley, and then the anti-Lebanon mountain range, whose peak is the border between Lebanon and Syria. So such a small country. It's only like 10,000 square kilometers. I don't know how it translates to U.S. Figures, numbers.
We'll have to look that up during the break. I don't know either.
It's like really very, very easy. Very small.
Very small.
And even in this very small country, I have such different geographies.
Yeah.
A coastal plain, you know, with a climate, geography, and agriculture, an openness to the sea, big cities that are open to the world and to the sea and to the spices and to diversity. Then a first mountain range, whose peak is at around 3,000 meters altitude, that is very well known for the cedars and the village of Bisharra of Gibran, Khalil Gibran. So it's like a completely different climate, completely different geography, different agriculture, different traditions, and a different cuisine. And just behind is the Bekaa Valley. The Bekaa Valley is a very fertile valley, but it is like it's like an introduction to the inland, to Syria and to the other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the last block between the Mediterranean and the inland.
So from a geographical standpoint, quite diverse across the country, but then also bordered by very different parts as well. So it seems like in many ways, like, I have to imagine there's a lot of really delicious food happening.
Well, there are a very, very lot of different things happening. Geography, people from different origins. There are all of these different things that are happening translates into different foods happening, and I would add interesting too.
And you were born in Lebanon.
I was born in Lebanon, raised in Lebanon, in a small village called Jaita near Beirut, outskirts of Beirut. Yes.
And what did you think you were going to be doing when you were a young boy growing up?
My mother used to be a nurse, and to please her, I had to be a doctor. But it was like for a very short while, because like it was like, yucky, I don't want to be so. And I was always amazed by architecture. I wanted to be an architect at one point. I'm glad I'm not. I'm very passionate by architecture, but I'm glad I don't do it, I mean. And I think I was always interested. I'm a son of farmers and producers. I was always amazed, you know, by gardening, not as gardening, you know. I was always amazed by the secret of life. How can you just have cold, bare soil, you know, and have a stupid seed, you know?
Yes,
just a seed.
Doesn't look like much.
What is a seed, you know? Like, what is this? It's like nothing. Like, you just throw it in the soil with a drop of water and it sprouts into life. So this was really, really wonderful. And then I think I was always amazed by the seasons, how we nearly never bought vegetables or fruits, you know. We were like expecting 15th of August. I'm not very old. I was born in 69. Don't look at me as I was a grandpa, you know, but I'm still from an age where we used to live a different way, you know. Like we never bought grape. Never bought grape. I have never seen someone else's fingertips, but ours, you know, or mine on grapes, because we used to wait for 15th of August where grapes were ripe enough, where we go up, you know, and pick grapes, or go to the garden behind the house and pick up the parsley for the tabbouleh, or wait for the winter for my uncle to bring the citrus from his garden. So everything was like just simply seasonal, and there was no other thing to do. You just wait for the thing in their own season. And I was always, I think, amazed by this secret of life, cycle of life, way of life, how life manifests and sprouts and gives.
So in 2004, you started the first farmers market in Beirut. Why wasn't there a farmers market there before? I mean, is that like an overt statement? I mean, was it really the first farmers market?
Was there a farmers market in New York before
the green market?
No.
I think there was definitely like community markets. There's a long history of community gardens
it's
in the city. You know, so similar, like
it's
where
similar.
There's like there was things happening, but there was no kind of like centralized or organized.
Yeah. America is a huge country. You know, Lebanon is a very, very small country where the production is never very far. So if I'm telling you that the country is 200 kilometers long by 50 kilometers large, and Beirut is in the center of this rectangle.
Uh-huh.
So the further it can be is like an hour and a half, 2 hours drive, or 150 or 200 kilometers. I'm trying to translate in time.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the American...
the time makes more sense anyway.
Yes.
You're like, if you draw a circle and you drive within, you know, 1.5 to 2 hours, then
so
you're like...
Everything used to be very close. So producers used to sell their produce in their own farms or along the roads, on the roads, let's say, or they used to bring their produce to the city central wholesale markets, you know.
Right.
But it was never a producers-only market. When I talk about a farmer's market, it is a producers-only market, where the producer, you know, fill up his car or his van by whatever he cooked or produced or planted or harvested, and comes and he or she sells them.
Right. So it's not like somebody has bought a big bushel of melons from somewhere else and can bring them into the market.
No, because we're not interested at all by the lemons themselves. We're not a food project. We are a human development project. We are not interested in the lemons by themselves. We are interested by the man or the woman who planted them, by the man or the woman who cooked this food, you know. Because when you're supporting just a product, just a lemon, it's just about that. But when I'm supporting the person behind this product, he or she will be doing better what they are doing and much more too.
So I'm assuming that you woke up sometime in the early 2000s and was like, I think I want to start this market.
Yes, I had an aha moment. I have a wonderful, wonderful story. You know, like it was on August 12th. I slept at 6 p.m. You know, I had a very nice evening. And then I woke up at 4 a.m. and said, oh, my God, I had this vision. I'm sorry, I'm bullshitting. This is all not true.
I'm like getting on the edge of my seat, nodding my head. I'm like, oh, yes, tell me more. Tell me more.
Sorry to disappoint you. I couldn't go more. No, it's not like this. It's just, you know, following the flow, what do you say, you know, like it's just an evolution from one thing to another. I'm a son of farmers and producers, and this is the start of everything. I studied graphic design at one point. I never worked in graphic design before finishing my studies. I was working in a cultural center. It was just the end of the war.
The civil war.
The civil war in Lebanon that started in 1975 and ended in 1991.
Okay.
So this very, very small country was divided into different pieces, you know, like Brooklyn, not even Brooklyn, like just Manhattan. You have like Fifth Avenue dividing the whole country into two parts. And then, you know, East and West are divided into 10 different parts each. So it was unbelievable. So we lived this. I lived this nearly half of my life. And then just one day it was like, okay, there's nothing anymore. There's no borders anymore. And it's all yours. So, really? And what do we do of it? You know, and what do we consider the others that we used to consider as the enemy from both sides? You know,
sure.
It's the same problem. So just at the end of the war, there was this wonderful man who created this cultural center in his beautiful old Lebanese house. And it was about, you know, art and culture. It was called Art and Culture. And it was bringing people together, and it started to draw. The roads were not good. It used to take you hours to go from one point to another.
Because of the war?
Because
like the infrastructure
war,
of the country
absolutely,
was?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And still, people were coming from like all around, just like for a music concert, a poetry reading. Like why are these people coming? And I understood the importance of a common ground.
A common ground, yeah.
And I started to understand that even if these people were killing each other yesterday, you know, and fighting, today we can bring them together around a common ground. Some of them would get together around, you know, art and cultural common grounds. And, you know, we can find other common grounds too. Common grounds can be in a bad way, you know, when you take fundamentalism or things like that, you know, or they can be in a positive way. For instead of pushing people on bad paths, why don't we find positive and constructive common grounds for them? And this was a great teaching in my life. After that, someone asked me to write a guidebook about Lebanon, and I went around this very small country, but that I didn't know at all. Because I was...
Because you hadn't traveled growing up.
I couldn't go out of my region to the other one. It was very dangerous. And still, like, you know, it's not true. I used to go nearly everywhere all the time because I never wanted to be in a box, you know, or in one place, even if I had to do nothing. I was just a kid, maybe. I was 15 or 17 years old, and I was going here and there and sometimes not even telling my parents. So going all around the country, I discovered not just a country, you know, with a beautiful, maybe, I don't know, archaeological or natural sites. I discovered wonderful people who are all so different, but all the same. If you come to them with open arms and open hearts, they would have wider hearts and arms. If you come with them with a negative thing, they would be more negative than you. So I started, you know, understanding the importance of getting together, the importance of finding a common ground. From there, I started travel writing, then I started food writing, which is a great passion of mine. Then I discovered slow food, and I started collaborating with slow foods. And I was sitting on the board of the international organization for 2 or 3 years, I think. Then I discovered something wonderful, which is called macrobiotics. And I studied the macrobiotics, and I was teaching macrobiotic cuisine for a while. And then, you know, it was just the right thing to do. Like one day in 2004, someone was organizing a garden show in Beirut for the first time. And they said, like, we need to have like a food section here, you know. So Kamal is a food guy. Let's ask him to do something around food. And I just, you know, called 10 producers, farmers, friends of mine who I was, you know, writing about or knowing. And like we were like at the end of this garden show in the pine forest in Beirut. There's a small pine forest around the hippodrome of Beirut. And this, you know, 5 days event was like a magnet attracting people. Everybody was attracted to this place, you know, because it's food, it talks to them, because it's tradition, because it's sincere, because it's authentic, because it's like real people coming from different regions and, you know, sharing a bite, a piece of bread or a bite of something with you. And after these 4 or 5 days of like great success, I said, well, okay, it's not something that's gonna end. 10 days later, I created something called Souq al-Tayyib, the market of goods, and it existed since as a farmer's market and developed into many different projects other than the farmer's market itself. So sorry, there was no aha moment.
No aha moment.
I'm sorry, because there was a long story, but no aha moment.
No, I mean, I think too, like that's often how things happen, is that you're like moving through life with intention. And, you know, situations arise and you have you're like, yes, let's do this.
And you have to react.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is our life, you know. By the end of the day, I'm sorry, we're not talking about agriculture, you know. For me, life is not about agriculture or about the radio or about cooking or about like, it's just about how we can make the best of whatever we have and do the best contribution to life in whatever we're doing. You're doing a radio show. How can you do the best contribution to life with the words you are, you know, speaking? So for me, it's just about that.
It's like your medium.
Yes. Your way of expressing yeah. yourself and giving back to life.
So if I were to arrive, you know, on a market day, can you kind of paint a picture for me? What does it look like? What are the things that I'm like smelling
wonderful
or
people.
Tasting? Yeah.
First of all, it's wonderful people. It's, you know, big smiles, beautiful eyes, very welcoming. So whether it is mainly the producers and the people who are there. So it's like, where are we here anyway? This is Roberta's,
Roberta's,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
Do you know where you are? It's like in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And it's like, I don't know where it is. Like, you know, like, how can you have a great pizza here, you know? But what happened is these people created like a space of their own. I don't want to say a bubble, you know, sometimes a bubble is not nice or it's negative, but they created a space, right? So the souk is the same. So how each and every one of us can create these spaces, you know, of positivity, of good in all meanings of good, not only of good taste, of good as ethics, of good as living, you know, of trust. And the Souq al-Tayyib on a Saturday morning is very much something like this. Yes, I can draw pictures of smells and, you know, like I can do a perfect journalist jobs and tell you stories for 10 minutes, but I'm not going to do so. And I'll tell you, you know, it's unfortunately a bubble of trust, of good, of people getting together around a common something between all of them. And I would love, you know, this bubble, you know, to grow the most possible, you know, and like, you know, in French we say touche d'huile, like a drop of oil that will spread and do more and more all around.
So
I'm not answering in the right way to you for all your questions today. I'm sorry, you must be hating me by now. I don't have an aha moment. I'm not, you know, drawing the picture of...
Well, no, I guess I'm curious. Like, I guess my question really is like, and I take your point, but I do have like a little, I have a curiosity around just like... Because I don't know
what would you buy, what would
yeah,
you
yeah, what are the, okay, like what are the like
you.
What are the things that
now
you're producing?
I'll tell you.
Yes. You know?
So there are fresh fruits and vegetables, there are preserves, natural preserves, because in Lebanon there's a tradition that we call Mune. And Mune is which exists everywhere in the world, you know. But in Lebanon there's a specific term for the preserves. It's called Mune. And then again, there's usually in the houses a specific room, like the pantry, which is called the room of the Mune.
Uh-huh.
It's very, very important for us because when you live in the mountain, you need to preserve the bounties of the good seasons, whether it is jams or pickles or meat with fat, viande confit,
yes,
you
yeah.
know, like all of these different things, dried legumes, wheat, all of these different things where you stock from the good season to the other seasons, or from the seasons of abundance to other seasons when you don't have this product. It's very, very seasonal. The products are very, very seasonal. So now it's end of winter, early spring. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of water. So there's a lot of foraging. And I adore all these wild herbs in this season. For me, the best season ever, to my taste, is now end of winter, early spring. It's beautiful weather. Flowers are everywhere. And as of the food, there is an abundance of... it's the end of the citrus season because winter is citrus season. And when I say citrus, it's like citrus of all colors, shapes, and form. Different kinds of oranges, different kind of grapefruit, different kind of mandarin and clementine. So really wonderful, wonderful things. So end of citrus, beginning of foraging, the start of tender planted herbs and greens, the start of wonderful parsley, because parsley is very, very important for us. It's the main ingredient for tabbouleh, and the best parsley is the smallest and the most tender.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're eating the parsley raw, we don't want our parsley to be old and
woody.
Yeah. So it's all of these different things. And then Saturday morning is a big day of the farmers market. There's always essage. You know what essage is like? Like a big paella, an inverted paella, let's say, or a wok. It's an inverted wok and there's fire below it.
Uh-huh.
And traditionally the fire used to be wood or pine needles because they take fire very quickly and you can control the fire very fast. Or now, obviously, it's more practically gas. And we have one now that we used in Washington 2 days ago that we're using upstate in a few days and we're going to leave in...
really?
And I know that there are some manushi shops anyway in New York now too. So manushi is our typical breakfast. It's like a pizza, but this is what we eat for breakfast because we eat salty. We don't eat sweet traditionally for breakfast, which is like a heartier or hard-like breakfast for people to be stronger at work.
And thank you. That's what I like. I don't get the sweet breakfast.
Me too.
It gives me a bellyache.
Me too. I have a sweet tooth, but not in the morning.
No, me neither.
So the manushi, the traditional manushi, is with za'atar. So za'atar is a mixture of wild thyme, sumac, sesame seeds, and salt, and olive oil. So we just spread this over it, and this is breakfast. And people queue, you know, for an hour. Maybe we don't queue usually in Lebanon. We're more like, you know, how would I find my way to...
Right, get there.
But still, in this microcosm, not to say bubble, without telling people what to do, they know the right thing to do, even like queuing, and they would just do it without someone telling them to do it.
And then you expanded on the market. I mean, you started hosting producer dinners as well.
It's not so. We started the farmers market in 2004,
uh-huh.
and it's a producers-only farmers market. That's very, very important. It's a way to bring the producer, you know, that we call a peasant, and peasant is like a bad word, you know, to someone. It's no. A peasant is not worse or not better than anyone else. Each one has a contribution to life. And the producer and the farmer has a great contribution because he or she is doing what we are eating every day. And it's very, very important.
Well, and part of that, like, national identity, like those.
In my opinion, there's nothing that speaks of roots and identity better than agriculture and cuisine itself. You know, when I think of Lebanon, it's tabbouleh and kibbeh. There are 5 million Lebanese in Lebanon, 5 million only, not more, 15 million around the world, a lot of in Brazil or here, a lot in the States and here and there. And the only thing that they took with us is their tabbouleh and kibbeh and their cuisine. You know, they didn't take the language or the costume or the architecture. This is the most sincere and authentic expression of one's history, roots, and tradition. The States is a country where people come from all over the world. They all speak English. They don't speak their languages. They are all dressed the same, but every Sunday or on every holiday, what the mother or the grandmother is going to do to perpetuate their history and roots is going to cook the traditional food of their origins. So we started with the farmers market in 2004, and it was a move from rural to urban for the producers. In 2007, it was like, why do we have only to do this move? Why don't we go back from time to time to the villages of origin? So we started doing food festivals in the villages. So
uh-huh.
this village is known for tomato. It's a tomato festival, fish festival there, cherry festival elsewhere. on a Sunday, obviously, and it's a day where there's like a local market for the local producers, historical visit or touristic visit of the region, you know, everything for the people of that village or region to be proud of what they have. It's very much about identity, recognition, and pride. At the same time, we're going to have lunch at noon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to have like a regular, you know, tabbouleh and hummus, generic lunch. We went to this village so far away, we want really to eat the typical foods of this village. So who can do it? No one but the home cooks. Because there's a big difference between restaurant cuisine, maize cuisine, and what people eat at home, home cuisine. It's nearly two completely different cuisines.
Huh.
So it was about, great, who are the best cooks in this village? Come along, you know, 5, 6, or 10 of them, and let's do a wonderful buffet of your specialties, of your village specialties, and people would be coming, helping themselves from this buffet for lunch, as if they were eating lunch at your own homes, you moms, you wonderful cooks, wonderful moms. So when these lunches starting to have a great success, we said, like, why do we have to wait a day, a year only to go to the village and to eat the typical food of that village? So this is where we created in 2009 taule, which means the table. So you're coming home and eating not in the dining room, you're eating on the kitchen table, where every day, every single day, it's a different woman from a different village who would come and cook typical food of her own village or region through a buffet of 10 or 15 different between salads and appetizer and main dishes. And people would come and help themselves from this buffet, and the woman would be standing and, you know, like helping people or greeting them as if she was hosting them in her own house. So this was the start of taule that we, I don't like to call it a restaurant. When people tell me restaurant, I say restaurant. Which restaurant's like, I like to call it farmer's kitchen. Like there is a farmer's market, this is the farmer's kitchen for us. So it's not just an expression as of agriculture, it's an expression of what, how do you take this agriculture to the next step, not with a chef, you know, mainly male chefs in professional restaurants, but more in a very simple way through home cuisine with mom and women.
That sounds like my, again, that sounds like my dream lunch situation. I want to take just a short break, and when we come back, we can talk about one of the newer projects on your docket. So hang tight, folks. You're tuned into the Farm Report. I am here with Kamal Mazawak, and we will be right back.
It's not just your garden, it's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, in Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes...
Which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He would be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
All right, we are back. You, of course, are tuned into the Farm Report, and we are discussing one of the first farmers market in Lebanon and the projects that have been spurned out of that kind of initial genesis. Your newest project, Beit Douma, is it's a like a I guess hotel is not quite the right word, but
now
that's
you have
the easiest
to
one.
So this is yes. at the restaurant, yes. the sunset, yes. So, oh my God, what am I going to say now? I'm sorry.
No, I just, it's like, here, I can give you something to react to.
No, it's not a hotel. It's not a hotel. You know what? No, because what is a hotel for you?
It's a place to be avoided.
To be, sorry?
Avoided.
Why?
I don't know. Because
why?
It's
tell
like
me.
Now
I'm asking some questions.
Yes. Well, I just find them like so antiseptic, you know, so impersonal. It's
impersonal.
Like, you know, there's no, especially I feel like in the U.S. they're often chains. So it's like you have no sense of where you are.
Mm-hmm. No sense of place. Great.
Yeah.
You're answering. I don't need to answer. And then these are spaces where you are confined in a room.
Yes.
And then there is nothing else. There is a public space to eat, you know. Then there is public space that is called the restaurant or the eatery or I don't know what. And there is a public space to sit, which is called the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of these spaces induce, you know, conviviality.
No.
What is? Do you know what it means, conviviality? Con means together.
Mm-hmm.
Viviality, it's living. Vivere, okay? So nothing induces conviviality. So if I need to go, if I'm on business, you know, I had a meeting 9 a.m. this morning. I have to leave the hotel at 8. You know, yesterday I was having dinner. I came back at midnight, you know, and I just need to sleep from midnight to 7, then take my showers and then take a ride and come to my job. So fair enough. I don't need more than that. I just
right.
need a room. I don't need conviviality. But when I'm going out of my house for leisure, not for business, I need a place where I can exist, which means where there's a kitchen, where there's a library where I can read a book, real books, not decor, because you're going to tell me there are 1,000 hotels with like fake libraries. No.
Fake, you go to pull the book off the shelf and the whole chunk of them comes out.
Or maybe it's a real one, but like it's a non-interesting one,
yes.
you know?
Yes.
And spaces to sit. Different spaces to sit, whether I want to sit alone or I want to sit with a group or the person I am with or like just talk to the other people or not, maybe, you know, but like give all of these options, which means it's a house. So why do we need always to take the professional model? And this is, you know, corporate, mainly corporate America, you know, where a restaurant is done like this, a hotel is done like this, and, you know, we're going to build on the same model. Guys, no. There is a different model. A restaurant is not the only way to eat. We eat elsewhere too, or unfortunately used to, which is called home. So we can build a public eating space on a model other than the corporate restaurant model, which is the model that we did in Beirut with Tawle. Tawle itself is a real home kitchen. You come, it's like mom's kitchen with two stainless steel counters and a gas range. And that's it. Because the woman who's coming to cook, if you give her a professional kitchen, she would look at it and like,
that's too much.
Freak. Ah!
Yeah.
And run away.
Yeah.
So, yes, my mom at home can cook for 60 people. You know, she cannot do it every day, but like we don't have the same woman every day. And she needs like a support system, some people, organization and everything, which we provide. So it's looking at things in a different way and saying we can build things in a different on a different model, which is like just simply, you know, the model that we lived or are living in. So I come back to Beit Douma. So why do I need to have the model, the corporate hotel model again? No, I just want to live in a house. I don't have the money or the time or the energy to have it myself. So can someone do it for me? But just like a real house. I want a real soap. I want a real towel. I don't want a paper near my bed that says to call this or to call that. I don't know. No, it's just like home. At home, I don't have a logo on my towels.
Right.
Why should I have it in these places?
Yes.
At home, you know, I don't have in my kitchen a dispenser of, I don't know. It's just like a well-furnished home, agreeable home, welcoming home, very well serviced. You know, there's a person who's taking care of the kitchen, there's a person who's taking care of, you know, the organization, someone of the clinic, just like a well, une maison bien tenue, a well, you know, managed or well done house. Mm-hmm. But that is not mine, where I can, you know, come in for a day or two or a week alone or with family and organize whatever I want. When I call to book, like, when do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? It's just like home and has nothing of the corporate world. So this is it. It's not a hotel. I don't know what to call it. It's like communal homes. It's like a communal home.
But I can come and stay there.
Yes, definitely.
Well, you've done a fair amount of traveling around the U.S. I'm wondering if you can share with us some of your observations. Like, are you feeling kind of optimistic or pessimistic about the state of our culture, our markets, our restaurants, the community that we're cultivating here?
I'm always optimistic, I hope. And, you know, there's always the full, the empty half and the full half of a glass, right? So it's always looking at the things in a good way. If we didn't have a problem, we wouldn't be looking for a solution. If we didn't have, you know, corporate and agro-industry and all of these things who depleted the soil and, you know, did sometimes good things, sometimes catastrophe, agriculture wouldn't have had this wonderful movement, you know, and reality of farming and of quality farming and natural farming or production, you know, mm-hmm. or the artisan, all of this, you know, traditional approach to cooking and to processing, food processing or butchering. So there are always these two sides of things. And I think everything is exacerbated, can we use this word,
yes.
in the States? So everything is like very bad or very good, or because it's a big country, it's a big economy, so nothing is like simple, let's say. But like I was speaking 2 days ago about a specific subject, let's say it's very much for me a country of trends too. Trends for the country and for the rest of the world. So this is where it's like a big responsibility. So when I see all of these trends, you know, I hate when I hear people saying like, wow, food is a trend now. I hate when I hear it, you know, because food shouldn't be a trend, you know. Fashion can be a trend. You're wearing red pants. This can be a trend now. It can be completely out of trend in two months or 2 weeks or 2 days. It's okay. You can wear blue ones. But, you know, you cannot change so much in food because this is something that you have to do every day, two, three or four times a day. And if we don't go towards doing the right thing, the right agriculture, the right food production, the right consumption, you know, it has enormous price and bad consequences on me as an individual, on us as a community, on life, on nature, on the environment, on the animals we're raising, on everything. So this interest, you know, about good production and good eating, I hope will move from a trend to a real understanding and the responsibility of each and every single individual. I was speaking a few days ago at the Chef's Collaborative, and my talk was titled F. F isn't for feed, F foodies. You know,
yes.
What I mean by foodies is foodies and trends and trendsetters, you know, like now it's kale and quinoa and, you know, and ramp, and tomorrow it's something else. And we just need to run under after a different trend just to bring more, attract more attention, to attract more clients and attract more business. It's just about the thing that, guys, it's not just about figures and business. It's about something else, too. So for me, it's very important to get to this understanding of, you know, life is not just about figures. And for me, corporate America is very much or just about that and should be looking for itself, and mainly because it's a role model for the rest of the world, at life in a different way, you know. It's not about just what you make, it's about what you bring to life, and it's about what you give back to life, to the environment, to social around you, because it's not just out of ethics, because it does pay back on your health, on your environment, on the world, on security, on all many different levels.
It's all connected.
All connected. And it's not all connected in a tree-hugging approach, no. It's just reality. When you don't take care of people and they are frustrated for such a long time, one of them is going to, you know, kidnap a plane and do September 11. It's just as simple as that. You know, I'm not a 1970 hippie, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not in Woodstock. This is reality, guys. This is reality. When you don't take care of the environment and you just, you know, throw poison and everything, you know, the rate of cancer is going to go berserk. And it's like, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't... I'm 47 years old. I'm not a grandpa. When I was a kid, we weren't supposed to say the word cancer. We used to say that other sickness or something. You don't say the word. Today, it's like a flu, you know, like it's like if you don't have it, touch wood, I hope no one will have it. If you don't have it, it's like, you know, it's not normal. It's like unbelievable. Why so? So it's not just about, you know, like a great speech. Oh, it's so nice. It's so holistic. And no, it's about reality.
Well, I think we think about that a lot here on the radio network. It's your food, what you eat, how it's grown, you know, it shapes your body, it shapes the planet. It's
what you get nurtured from, I would say.
Yeah.
Not just what you eat, you know, because we're surrounded by, you know, all this crap, I would say here. I'm joking. It's not crap. You know, like all this upcycling, you know, we're sitting on upcycled chairs, on all beautiful old chairs. But this is nurturing too. Why aren't you sitting in a corporate space?
Right.
Why aren't we sitting in a cubicle? Right? So nurturing is not just about food. It's about everything, you know, that surrounds us. You asked me to talk about the farmer's market. You said, how does it smell? What do you see? So it's about all our senses, what we eat, what we smell, what we see, what we do, what we, you know, I came in, you know, angry, I made you angry, I came in happy and open, I made you more confident and trusting, you know, it's like all of these things are important. We are not just a bank account. We are much more than that. We are all of these different things together. We are not just foodies, you know, like, oh, the nicest thing, and what did the press say? No, it's not just this. It can be the nicest meal with, you know, no responsibility at all in the kitchen for the employees or for the animals in the farm or for the parties that they picked. So it's all of these things together. And there is no perfect solution where everything is perfect. There is just, at every single second, you know, the awareness of each individual, you and me, you know, to make the best choice in every action that we do. What is this coffee you're holding in your hand? It's not the best coffee ever, because the absolute best coffee does not exist. But is it the best that you can have for now, for this morning? So this is about this. This is the responsibility of each and single individuals of doing the best choices every single time in every single thing.
Gauntlet thrown, guys.
I'm sorry, I'm not speaking about agriculture.
I think you are speaking about agriculture, though. I mean, I think we're taking your point. In some ways, I feel like, you know, you're coming full circle to the desire to extract it as a separate thing.
Yes.
You know. If folks want to learn more about you or follow your work or come visit, what's the best way for them to find you?
I think find themselves. You know, for me, you know, I just tell a story not to make my story better known. There is a word very trendy now, you know, in the trends called inspirational.
Uh-huh.
What inspirational means? It means you're going to listen or see something and it's going to inspire you. So it's about you. It's not about the story. But if someone wants to know the story, there's a website called sukettayib.com. And we would be very, very happy hosting people in Lebanon. Unfortunately, there are more travel bans, they are called, or something from the States to Lebanon. But like before, we hosted for more than a year students from the new school in New York. So we're always very, very interested in these exchanges because it's very enriching for us. It's very enriching. Like it's always nice. You cannot meet the same. You need to meet the other. So we're open to any visitor, anyone who would like to come visit us, or just check what we do on our website, sukutayib.com.
Kamal, thank you so much. It's been really great chatting with you.
Thank you so much.
Well, there we have it, folks, the debut episode of this season's Farm Report. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Big thanks to David, who engineered my show today, and a shout out to our sponsors who make the program possible. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes. It'd be great to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram. It's Aaron_Fairbanks. You can follow Heritage Radio and their work at Heritage_Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.